Third chapter of Hilchas Gzeila Vaveda, the laws of robbery and of lost objects. This chapter contains 16 halachas. Perek Shlishi, the third chapter, halacha Aleph. We learned in the final halacha of Perek Beis about the law of a stolen object which has changed when it is in the hand of the thief. If the object has increased in value as a result of some action of the thief, then he only has to pay back the original value of the object and not the increased value as a result of his efforts. However, if it just became more expensive as a result of change in market value, then he does not have to return this extra amount. The first two halachas in this paddock continue on the same line of reasoning. Halacha Aleph. Hagezel chavi shel yayin mechaveri. One steals a barrel of wine from his neighbor. Varehi shava dinner b'shas hagzela. And at the time of the theft, it was worth one dinner. V'hukra etzlei. And while it was in the possession of the thief, it became more expensive. The value of wine went up. V'amda barba. And now it is worth four. It has gone up four times in value. Instead of being worth one dinner, it is worth four dinarim. Im shavar achavis. If he broke this barrel, a shasa aisei, or he drank up the contents, a machra nasna matana achashahokra, or he sold it or gave it as a gift after the value went up, meshalim arba keshas heitza mina eilam. He must pay the amount of four dinar, what it was worth at the time that it disappeared. In other words, we are wondering here, since when he stole it was worth one, should he pay back one? Or is he responsible for what it was worth at the time that he drank up the contents or sold it? So we say that we are strict on him, and he must pay back the value what it was worth when it disappeared. If this object was still in existence, if the contents of the barrel were still in existence, he would be forced to return the entire contents of the barrel. And that if he did so, the original owner would have a barrel which is worth four dinarim, since the present market value is four. And therefore, he must pay back this amount. However, this is only when he did an intentional action to destroy or remove from his possession the contents of the barrel. But if nishpara may allow ayavda, but if the barrel broke by itself or was lost, in this case, meshalim dinar kershas hagzela. He only has to pay back one dinar with the value what it was worth at the time of the theft. And apparently the reasoning is that the reason we make him pay four in the first case of our halacha is that when he stole originally the barrel and it was worth one, he was now responsible to pay back one. When he drank the contents or sold the contents, it's as if he did another act of theft. And this is now another act of theft of three dinarim. In addition to the previous one dinar, he now stole another three dinar by drinking the contents of the barrel, which is now worth four. Therefore, with the second act, he has an additional three he is responsible for and must pay back a total of four. However, if he did no act, that the barrel just fell apart or was unintentionally lost, there is no second action that we can hold him responsible for. Therefore, he is only responsible for the first dinner as of the time that he stole the barrel. Halacha Beis. Let's say the opposite happened. At the time that he stole the barrel, it was worth four. And now there is a glut of wine, and the price of wine has gone down. And now it's worth one. It has gone down in price one-fourth. Do we say in this case also that he must pay back the value only what it is worth at the time that he drank the contents or sold the contents, only one dinar? So the Rambam says, no, meshalim arba kishas hagzela. He must pay back four as it was worth at the time it was stolen. Regardless of what happened to it, bein sheshvara or yishta, whether he broke the barrel or he drank the contents, bein shenishpara ayavda me'ala, and regardless of whether it broke or was lost by itself, v'kein kol kiyetze b'zeh, so to any similar case. And here again, the apparent explanation is not because we look at the value of the object at the time it was lost. The reason we made him pay four before was not because that's what it was worth at the time that he drank up the barrel. The reason is, as we said previously, that we had to pay, he had to pay one because that's what it was worth at the time that he stole the barrel. And now he did another act of theft, so to speak, and he must pay three. In this case, an halacha base, when he stole the barrel originally, it was worth four. He's responsible to pay four. Later on, the value of the barrel went down. What do we care? He still has to pay the original four. Now it's only worth one. Too bad. He should have given back the barrel as it was. He wouldn't have to pay four then. He would have only had to give back the barrel. But since the contents of the barrel are not there, then he has to pay the original four that he was responsible for when at the time of theft. And now another ambiguity about the value of the stolen object. Halacha Gimel. Hagezel chesel sheyesh bechamishim tmarim. He stole a basket or some sort of vessel which has within it 50 dates. Now, if this basket of dates was sold as a whole, it would be sold cheaper. But if you sold the dates individually, you would get more money. As the custom is, when you sell a large amount of something, you give a discount. In this case, if the whole basket, what is this basket of dates worth? If it was sold as a basket of dates, it would be worth nine units of money. If it was sold individually, one took the extra pain to sell each of the dates individually or in smaller groups of dates, it would be worth not 9, but 10. He stole the whole basket. Now what does he have to pay, 9 or 10? If you sold this whole basket together as one basket of dates, he would sell it for 9. If you sold them individually, it would come out to a total of 10. Are we strict on the thief and make him pay back 10? Or is it okay if he pays back 9? Ein mishalim elatisha. He only has to pay back 9. Ve'ein anigzel yachol le'merlei. And the one who was robbed is not able to say, ani achas achas ha'yisi meicher. I intended to sell them individually, and therefore to me it was worth 10. Since it was a basket he stole, and the basket as a whole was worth 9, this is what he must pay back. So too in a case where one object is damaged or anything similar regarding non-sanctified objects, we pay back the object according to the way it was when it was damaged or when it was stolen. On the other hand, avu behektesh, einakein, if it regards sanctified objects, that someone used something which was donated for use in the temple, and it was either stolen or damaged, elam mashalim asara. In such a case, we do not give the thief the benefit of the doubt. We give hektish, the sanctified material, the benefit of the doubt. We give the beis hamikdash the benefit of the doubt. And instead of paying back 9 in such a case, we would say that it would be sold one at a time, and we would get the full value of 10, and therefore the thief is required to pay back 10 to hektish. In the previous parak, we learned about the concept of shinui, when the stolen object has actually changed in form. And once it has changed in form, this is another factor that leads us to conclude that the robber has acquired ownership of the object, and therefore is only required to return the monetary value rather than the object itself. However, when it is only a temporary change, the object has not really changed, then it is still considered to be in the hands of the original owner, and therefore he must return the original object. The next halacha, actually two halachas, deal with what happens when the object has decreased or entirely lost its value. In which cases is it considered to be a change? And therefore, the ganef, or the gazlan, has required ownership of the object, in which case is not. Halacha dalet. Gazel behema v'hizkina. Aikacha shakacha sheina yachol achzer. He stole an animal, and the animal aged. He held on to the animal for a long time, and it became old. And this is certainly a permanent change. The animal is not going to become young again. And so, too, it became skinny to such an extent that it will never be able to reacquire its previous fatness. For example, it had some sort of illness for which there is no cure, that it will regain its previous health. Or he stole a coin, and the coin is now cracked. It will never be able to be welded together and become a valuable coin. Or the king of this land has invalidated this type of coin. Or he stole fruit, and all of the fruit has rotted away. Or he stole wine, and the wine has now turned to vinegar. In all of these cases, it is considered to be a complete change. It's like someone who stole a vessel and smashed it to pieces. And therefore he must pay back the value of what it was worth at the time of the robbery. However, if he stole animals, and these animals became skinny, but it is possible to restore them to their previous health. Or he stole slaves, and these slaves aged. He stole coins, and although the coins were declared invalid in this country, they nevertheless still have value in another country, so they have not completely lost their value. He stole fruit, and some of them have rotted away, but not all of them. Or he stole truma, and the truma has become impure. It's still truma, but it can no longer be eaten because it has become impure. Or he stole chametz, leavened food, and it has passed through the days of Pesach in a Jew's ownership, and therefore one is forbidden from having even any benefit, not only from eating it, but even from having any benefit, since it's chametz sha'avar lava Pesach. Or it was an animal which was used for some sort of sin. For example, someone had bestiality with it, and now one can no longer bring it as an offering. It has lost its value as a sacrifice. Or for some other reason it has become invalid to be brought as a sacrifice. It has developed a blemish of some sort. Or now it is due to be stoned. The animal killed a person, for example. And there were witnesses. The animal will be put to death. And the animal can no longer be used for any benefit whatsoever. But in any of these cases, since the animal is still in its original form, or the chametz is still in its original form, or the fruit has not completely changed, or the coin still has value in another land, the truma is still called truma, and the animal can go back to its previous health, the thief can tell the original owner, here it is, take your animal back, or your coins back, it's here before you, and he can return it itself. Even though now, in the case of chametz, for example, it is totally worthless, nevertheless, since it has not changed from its previous form, he can return the object itself, although it's now useless, to the original owner. Why do we not say, incidentally, in the case of Avodim v'hizkino, that in the beginning of this halacha, when he stole an animal that got old, we say this is a permanent change. But suddenly, when he stole slaves, and the slaves got old, we say that he can give the slave back. What is the difference? The commentaries explain that a slave has the same law as karka, as land. And land cannot be acquired through theft of this sort. Theft cannot change. It cannot change ownership. And therefore, although it is a permanent change which was effected in the slaves, they are considered just like the land. They have the same law as land, and therefore they do not ever come into the possession of the robber. However, halacha hei, b'meh dvarim amurim, when does this apply? That the thief can give back even this useless object, k'shehechzer hagzela, when he returns the stolen object itself. Avalim nisrafa hagzela ay avda, but if the stolen object was burned up or lost, achar shenesra b'hano, after it was already prohibited to have any benefit from it. If it was, let's take the chametz. The chametz was now asur ba'ano, one cannot get benefit from it. And if he came now to return it to the original owner, he could give him the worthless chametz back. But that's only if he gives the chametz back. Let's say the chametz was lost, and he no longer has what to give back. In such a case, chayiv la'achshir le'dameh kashas hagzela. He must give back the value of the object, what it was worth at the time it was stolen. that since originally it was worth money, although now he would not have to pay back anything, he could give him back worthless chametz. But since he cannot give him back the original object, he is now required to give back money. And the money, the worth, not what it would be at the time after it was prohibited in Hana, prohibited to have benefit. The original value. And therefore he must return the original money. And furthermore, lefichach, therefore, since we do not look at this stolen object as a valueless object, if he denied having stolen the object after it was already prohibited in Hanah to have benefit, let's say he stole chametz, held it through Pesach, now one cannot have benefit from it, and he was confronted that he stole this chametz, and he denied, v'nishpa, and he took an oath, and later on it was determined that his oath was a false oath. Chayev l'shalem keren v'chaymesh. For Asham, he must bring not only the original value of the object, but he must add another fifth, meaning 25% of the original amount, or one-fifth of the total, the original principal plus his penalty. For Asham, he must bring an Asham Gzela, the guilt offering for someone that has stolen something and then taken a false oath as to substantiate his innocence, and later on is proven wrong. And even though it was now something which was totally valueless, nevertheless, since we don't look at the value of what, how it was at the time he denied it, we look at the original value when it was stolen. Therefore, so too, we not only make him pay back the principal, we make him pay back the penalty as well, the one-fifth, the chaymish, and he must bring a sacrifice. Halacha Vav. A gezel behema, someone robs an animal, and then he utilized the animal for his own purposes. V'nosa aleh masa, he carried a load on it. Or yirochav aleh, he rode on top of it. A choresh, a doshba, and he used it for plowing or for threshing. Or kiyetsa bazeh, or some similar act. And when he was finished using it, v'achzir lebaileh, he returned it to the original owner. What happened now? He stole an animal. He returned the animal. Does he have to pay for what the animal saved him as a result of its work? In this case, Alpha Pisha Aver B'lay Sasa, even though he has violated the biblical prohibition, Lay Sigzal, of not stealing, Eina Chayev L'Shalim Klum. According to the law of the Torah, he is not required to repay anything. Shani Leif Sida V'lay Chisha, because he did not ruin the animal, he did not damage it, and he didn't cause it any lack in its, any decrease in its physical health. Even if he did, it's something which could certainly return to its original state. And therefore he returns the animal as it was originally, no problem. And even though he saved himself some money by using it to plow or something of the sort, nevertheless he's not required to pay that back. However, if we already know that this person is somebody that steals to try to get away with such things, or he holds on to someone else's possessions, as we explained in Perek Aleph Halacha Dalit, the difference between leisigzel and leisashek. Leisigzel is when you've taken away the person's possessions by force, and leisashek is when originally the possessions come into your hand according to the will of the original owner. But when he wants to take it back, you hold on to it, and by force you don't give it back to him. So it could be a case where the person borrowed the animal willingly, but when the owner wanted it back, he wouldn't give it back. If it's someone that commonly does something like this, or does similar things time after time, in such a case, you penalize him. The rabbis are required to give him a financial penalty, and even outside Eretz Yisrael, that normally penalties, fines, are not issued outside the land of Israel. In such a case, even outside Israel, you are allowed to fine him. How much should his fine be? We estimate how much is the value. How much would he have paid to rent such an animal? Or how much did he gain, for example, as a result of using this animal to plow his field? How much more is the field now worth as a result of the plowing? Figure out how much that is. And pay back that money to the one that was robbed. And although, since he didn't damage the animal, he is strictly according to the law not required to pay anything. But since we see someone who is constantly doing such acts, we penalize him and make him pay back the amount which he saved as a result of use of the animal to ensure that he does not do it again. Halacha Zayin, Hatekef Avdei Shel Chaverei. One that forcibly grabbed the slave of one's neighbor, v'also bei malacha, and he used him out for a certain act of work. V'loy bitlu mi malacha acheres. However, he did not prevent him from doing any other work. Let's say this slave was a servant of Reuven, and Shimon took Reuven's servant and made him work on something. And at the time that he used him, he anyway would not have been doing anything to Reuven. Does he have to pay Reuven for the use he used of his slave? Pater, he is exempt from payment. It's preferable for a person that his servant does not sit idle. If he anyway didn't have any work for him, he's happier he should be working at least for someone else. Why is that? Because otherwise the servant will become accustomed to be lazy. He'll sit around and do nothing, and he'll be more likely to sit around on the job when the owner needs him to do work. Therefore, he's happy that he works at least for someone else. However, if as a result of the work that Shimon took him to do, he has been prevented from doing work for someone else, he must pay back the owner of this servant as if he took a worker for himself. He must pay for the value of the work which he got from this slave, in addition, of course, to returning this servant back to the original owner. Halacha ches. Hatekif sfinosu shel chaveiro ve'yosam be'malacha. Someone forcibly grabbed his neighbor's ship, and he used it for work. He worked with the ship. Now, there are two things a person could do with his ship. He could either have this boat for his own personal use, the owner, or sometimes we could have an owner who occasionally rents out his boat. Now, the law will depend on what kind of boat this is. If it is normally not rented out, but used for the personal use of the owner, we estimate how much it depreciated in value, and after giving back the boat, he pays this amount of depreciation. Just like any case of a gazlan, a thief, who must pay back what it was worth at the time he stole it. So if the boat was worth $1,000, and as a result of his using it is now worth $900, he's got to pay back the original value. So he gives back the boat, which is $900, and gives the depreciation, the $100, which is depreciated as a result of his use. That's if it's normally used for personal use. If it is normally used for rental purposes, then it depends how it is that the person took the boat. Did he take the boat intending to pay rental fees to the owner, and the only thing he did wrong was not ask him for permission to rent it? Or did he go straight out and steal the boat? So it comes out to be a curious law, curious din in this case. If it's a boat which is normally rented, and he originally used the boat with the intention of paying for its use, since he went into the boat without permission of the owner, if the owner of the boat wants to take the rental fee for the boat, he can take that. Because if the rental fee is worth more than the depreciation, let's say that normally he would rent out such a boat for $110, and now it's depreciated $100. If he wants, he can take the rental fee, which is $110. And if he wants to take the depreciation, let's say normally he would rent out the boat for $90, he can choose to take the depreciation value, which is $100, since that is more. That even though the thief was intending to rent the boat, and then he would only have to pay the rental fee, why is it then we can force him to pay the amount of depreciation? Because he didn't ask permission of the owner, and therefore it's the owner's prerogative to take whichever amount is more. But curiously enough, this is only if he intended on paying. Let's say he went and outright stole the boat. If he went right out as a robber to steal the boat, in that case, we have no possibility to force him to pay rental fees. How does rental fee fit in over here? He's a robber like any other robber. He's a gazlan. What does a gazlan have to pay back? He has to pay back the value of the object at the time it was stolen. It has nothing to do with rental fees. If the boat was worth $100, and now it's worth $900, he has to pay the amount of depreciation because he must compensate the owner for the value as it was worth at the time of theft. And rental fees don't fit in over here. So even if the rental fee would be worth more than the depreciation, the gazlin gets off easier than the one that intended to pay the schiros. Since the one that intended to pay the schiros, the rental fee, is at least in the category of paying a rental fee. But the thief doesn't fit into the laws of rental fee whatsoever. The king called Koyetzib is so to any similar case of any other object which is sometimes rented. Halachatas. Hador b'chatzar chavdeire shalemi daitei. Somebody went to live in the courtyard of his neighbor without his knowledge. He was house-sitting without knowledge of the owner. If this house is not, or this courtyard is not usually rented, he doesn't have to pay any rental fee to the owner. And even if this person normally would pay rent for a place to live, and therefore he would normally be paying rent anyway, why shouldn't he pay rent for this place? But nevertheless, since the owner does not usually rent out the place, he doesn't have to pay. This one benefited and this one didn't lose. In other words, the one that was sitting in the house gained something, and the one that owns the courtyard didn't lose anything. Anyway, he wouldn't get any money for this, and since he didn't do any damage to the property, therefore he shouldn't have to pay any money. However, but if this courtyard is normally rented out, in this case, even though the one that has uninvitedly sat himself down in this courtyard, normally he would not rent out property for himself. Nevertheless, he does have to pay rental fee, because he lost money for the one that owns the courtyard. Since normally he would rent out this courtyard, and now he was unable to because someone has squatted there, he has caused him a financial loss, and he is required to compensate him for it. Halacha Yud. Let's now envision this following case. We have some white wool and also some dye. For argument's sake, let us say that there is blue dye. The white wool is worth, let's say, $10. And the dye has a certain amount also. Let's say it's $5 worth of dye. Now, white wool is worth more, as we see from the Gemara's case, than dyed wool. So let's say the blue dyed, the same amount of wool if it was dyed blue, let's say it would be worth $9, whereas the pure white wool is worth $10. In this case, someone without the knowledge or permission of the owner dyed this white wool blue. Halach Yud. Misha hoyulet semer v'samamonim shruin. Someone owned wool, white wool, and there were literally spices, in this case meaning dyes, different sorts of herbs or whatnot, which were used to change the color, were soaking and ready to be used. A person came along, and he dyed this wool with this dye, without the knowledge of his neighbor, the one who owns both the dye and the wool. The law is meshalim leidmei mashehifsid betzemer. He must pay back the owner this which he decreased the value of the wool. If the white wool was worth 10 and now it is dyed blue and it is worth 9, he must pay him 1 to compensate him for the loss. But now the additional question of the Gemara, as explained by the Magid Mishnah and the Ravid, is as follows. This is as applying to the wool. But what about the dye? Let's say, as we mentioned, this blue dye was worth $5. And he has taken one-fifth of it, let's say a dollar's worth of dye. And now he has taken it from the pot where it is soaking, and it is now absorbed in the wool. Does he have to compensate him for the loss in dye as well? On the one hand, we could say that the dye is not lost, the owner still has it, only now it's absorbed in the wool, and therefore he should not have to pay for it, the owner still has it. This is not the case with the wool, because one could never fully remove this blue dye from the wool to return it to white. On the other hand, the owner might want to claim that although he still has the dye, it's useless to him now since it's absorbed in the wool. He wanted to have the dye in its pure form so he could use it to color other materials. In the Gemara, the answer is not given to this question. And therefore, the Rambam decides the law as follows. That when it comes to paying the money, we do not require the robber, the one that used this dime without permission, to pay, since he can always answer that the original owner still has this dime, just that it's absorbed in the wool. On the other hand, let's say the original owner grabs the money from the one who died without permission. In that case, we cannot tell him to return it, because he can always say that I wanted the dye in its original form. This is what the Rambam now says. The way the Magid Mishnah and the Raimit phrase the Rambam's statement over here, it should really say, umachashiv. We count the increase in the value of this dye which is absorbed in the wool. In other words, we cannot make the thief pay for the decrease in dye, since this dye is al-gabe ha-tzemer, it's absorbed in the wool, and we cannot make him pay for it. But on the other hand, v'im tafas anizik, t'mei mashachis ramin ha-samamonim. But if the one who, the original owner, grabs money to compensate himself for the dye which is now missing from the pot full of dye, ain't might see him beyond day. We cannot take the money away from him and return it to the thief, since he can always claim, I wanted it in its pure form. The next halacha deals with the case of shlichas yad b'pikodin. Pikodin is something which is entrusted in a watchman's hand for safekeeping. Let's say Reuben has asked Shimon to watch a certain object for him and does not pay him for his watching of the object. The law is that Reuben, who was watching Shimon's object, is required, since he has taken this responsibility, to guard the object. If there is an einus, something beyond Reuben's control, and the object is lost or destroyed, since he was not getting paid for it, he is not responsible for damage done to the object. However, Reuven, since he was told only to watch the object, does not have any right to utilize this object for his own purpose. Shlichus yad, to literally stretch forth his hand to the object and move it to another place, for example, for his own purposes. In this halacha, the Rambam tells us when it is that somebody who utilizes this pikadon for his own purpose becomes in the category of a gazlan, that he has stolen the object. Halacha Yud Aleph. Hashelech yad b'pikodein, someone that utilizes the object, or in this case apparently moves it from one place to another for his intending to use it for his own purposes. Bein shesholech yad ba'atzmei, whether he himself did it, or whether he did it through his child or his slave or a messenger, Hareza Gazlan, he is considered to be a thief, a robber, and he is responsible for any sort of damage to the object, even if it was beyond his control. He was, so to speak, forced to do it, but it was ba'inus. In other words, the object, for example, was lost in a manner which was beyond his control. And the stolen object is considered in his possession like the law is by any thief. Once he has moved the object, it becomes his, and he is responsible for any damage to it. Let's say he did not actually utilize the object, but only thought about utilizing it. He only thought about it. He is not responsible for it until he actually does utilize it. And once he does utilize it, he is responsible for it, even though he has not decreased the value of it whatsoever. He has only used it. He has just taken it from one place to another within his possession in order to utilize it for his own purposes. He has not yet used it, but he is taking it somewhere else in order to use it. For example, he was watching a plow, and he is intending to use this plow for his field. So he takes it from his garage and brings it to the field. And on the way, it gets destroyed somehow. Harei zechayev, he is responsible. Sheshlichos yad ein etzricha chisorin. Because when someone utilizes an object without permission, he doesn't have to damage it before it becomes his responsibility. Merely utilizing the object, or even moving it with the intention of utilizing it, already makes it his responsibility. However, this is when it applies to the entire object. Let's say that there is a large amount of something, and he intends to utilize only a small amount of it. He's been made a watchman over the entire amount, but he intends to utilize only a certain amount. In the next halacha, he gives two examples. He is watching a barrel of wine, and he intends to steal or utilize part of the bottle of the barrel of wine. And so too, he is watching a wallet full of money, and he intends to take a bit of the money in the wallet. What then is the law? Is he responsible for the entire wallet, or only the amount he intended to use? Halacha Yud Beis. Higbia es achavis litl mimena revis. If he lifted up a barrel in order to take one revis, about 3.5 ounces from the barrel, is he responsible for the entire barrel or only that one revis he planned on taking? He is responsible for any damage to it even though he didn't take. And the reason is, certainly the one he intended to take, we learn from the previous halacha Yud Aleph that once he moves it, which he did here, and lifted up the barrel, he is responsible for it. But what about everything else? Everything else, he didn't intend on touching. However, since he also really wants the wine which is in the rest of the barrel, because it protects the one revis he is going to take, because one revis in a barrel of wine will not last long, but when all of the barrel is filled with wine, then the revis will last a long time and not decrease in taste. Therefore, he wants the rest of the wine there also. It is also helping him. Therefore, he is responsible for the entire amount. But if he lifts up a wallet in order to take one dinar, one amount of currency from this wallet, or any similar case where it's not one unit, like the case of the barrel of wine, how is this suffix? In this case, we're in doubt. Even this chayev b'chol akis, or this chayev b'dinar b'lvat, is he responsible for the entire wallet, or only the one he was intending on taking? In the case of the wine, it's one unit, and the rest of it is helping out the one he intended to take. But in the wallet, it's all independent. And in the Gemara, this question is asked, and not answered. And therefore, the Rambam leaves it as a suffix. It is a doubtful case whether he's responsible for that one dinar or the entire wallet. However, this question arises only because he moved it. Let's say he did not lift up the barrel of wine or did not lift up the wallet. Halacha Yud Gimel. Hayu peiros mufkadim metzlei v'notl miktsasam. He was guarding fruit, and he took only some of the fruit, and the rest of the fruit was left in its previous place. In this case, certainly, eina chayev ela b'achrayes ha-peiros shenotal. He is only responsible for the fruit that he took. Ushar ha-pikadim amunach mimkemi b'rishus b'aylovu. And the rest of the object, in this case, the fruits, which is sitting in its original place, is within the ownership of its previous owner. But if the remainder of fruit was ruined as a result of his taking this fruit, then he is chayev b'keil, he must pay for the entire value. Ketzad, for example, hites achavis bimkema. Instead of lifting up the barrel, as was in halacha Yud Beis, he only tilts the barrel over without moving it. V'notel mimena revius ayeser. He took a revius or more. Im nishpara achar shenotel v'hi bimkema. If the barrel was broken after he took this wine, and it's still in its original place, ein achayev. He's only responsible for the amount he took. He didn't lift up the barrel, therefore the remainder of the barrel is within the possession of the original owner. However, if it turned into vinegar, which could happen, and apparently in this case happened as a result of his emptying out part of the barrel, and therefore because there's empty space in the barrel, the rest of it turned quickly to vinegar. Mashalim is to make kula kashasak zela. He must pay back the entire value, what it was worth at the time he stole it. Meaning at the time that he took the revis or more. But came kol kayetze bezesu to any other case where his action led to a loss of the entire object. Up till Halacha Yud, we've been speaking about a person who would obviously be considered a gazlan, since he did an action without the permission of the owner. In the following halachas, Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, Yud Gimel, we spoke about someone who was of Shaleach Yad, that originally the Pikodain, the entrusted object, belonged to him, but then he was utilizing some of it or all of it for his own benefit. and therefore is considered a gazlan. In this halacha yadal, we will deal with another case where even though he did not directly take control of the object, nevertheless he is considered a gazlan. A kefir b'fikadim b'bezdin. A person denied he had this object in court. For example, Reuven gave Shimon, entrusted him with a watch. Later, Reuven comes back and asks for his watch, and Shimon says he has no watch. Reuven takes Shimon to Bezdin, to court, and in Bezdin, Shimon says he has no watch. And he was, and witnesses came and testified that they see him, they saw him in possession of the watch. So then the law is, if at the moment he testified that he did not have the watch, he did have the watch, at that time he gets the law of a thief, of a gazlan, and he is responsible for any damage to it. Although he did not do anything except make a statement in court, that statement transforms him from a watchman to a gazlan. Halacha tezvav. Hashayel shalei midas habaylim hareze gazlan. Borrowing something without permission of the owner is also called, makes the person a thief, a gazlan. Hoya kli biyad b'nei shel balabayis or biyad avdei. If there was a certain vessel in the hand of the child of the owner or his slave, and one a person took this vessel and utilized it for his own purposes. Let's say, for example, a man sent his child to the store with a quart jar to be filled up with something from the store. And when he came, the store owner wanted to measure a quart for someone else, so he took this quart jar and utilized it to measure something for another person. This is called borrowing without permission of the owner, because he can't ask permission of the child or the slave. It doesn't belong to them. It belongs to the father or the master. So he is called borrowing without permission. Once he does that, it technically is his possession. But he's chayev ba'ansav. And he is responsible for any damage to it until he returns it to the original owner. Therefore, if he only returns it to the child who was holding it, or to the slave, and one of them lost it, the child or the slave lost it, or it became broken, it broke through no fault of his own, he is required to pay back. That since he borrowed it without permission of the owner, it became his, he must return it to the owner. He returned it to the child, or he returned it to the slave. They're not the owner. He must return it to the owner. Since he did not, he is chayev ba'onsin. Since they lost it or they broke it, therefore, the store owner or whoever borrowed the object is required to pay. So to any similar situation. The final halacha of this chapter deals with the case of a mashkan, collateral, and grabbing collateral for an unpaid loan in order to ensure repayment. Halacha tezayin. Hachaytef mashkan miyad haleve. Someone that grabs an object from a borrower without permission of the Jewish court, he is considered to be a gazlan, a thief, even though the borrower owes him the money. Let's say Reuven has lent Shimon $100 and Shimon does not pay. Reuven sees Shimon on the street, and since he hasn't paid him the money, he grabs the watch of Shimon. Reuven grabs the watch of Shimon as a mashkin to ensure repayment. If he went to court, to Bezdin, and the court appointed a shliach, a representative, to take a mashkin, he would be allowed to do so. But the lender himself is not allowed to do so. And if he does, he is a gazlan. And certainly, if he enters into the person's house and takes the object, shul gazlan, certainly then he's a thief. The verse in Dvarim Chavtal Yeralev says you should stand outside and have the borrower bring the mashkin to you. And even a shliach bezdin, a representative of the court, is not allowed to enter the house of the borrower to take a mashkin. So there, certainly, the lender himself is not allowed to enter the house. And he is called a gazlan, even though he is owed the money.